It's an honor to get to spend some time together tonight, learning a little bit about life's transitions and navigating those transitions and difficult moments that exist throughout life. Before we start, we have to give a very special shout out. There's somebody in the room that is very, very important, and we're so glad that she was able to join us. Rabbi Kamenetsky's Bubby is here. A round of applause for Bubby. That's right. She deserves it. There wouldn't be Rabbi Kamenetsky if it wasn't for Bubby. So we got to give Bubby all the credit. And it's an honor that she went out of her way to come here tonight and to at least listen to her grandson's Divrei Torah tonight. You know, the flyer said that we have to share some advice tonight that you can't get on ChatGPT. That's what the flyer said. You guys saw that? Yeah, everybody saw that? So what's the first thing that I did before getting up here tonight? I asked ChatGPT. I said to ChatGPT, I said, what do you think are some pieces of advice that you can't get on ChatGPT? I figured maybe it'd have an interesting answer. So listen to what it said. It said, I actually think that's a fascinating challenge because the advice itself doesn't have to be something ChatGPT can't say. It has to be something ChatGPT can't know. AI can synthesize wisdom, but it can't replace the perspective of someone who has lived a particular life, taught hundreds of students, made mistakes, and watched people succeed and fail over decades. So while it is true that the night's topics are all revolving around ChatGPT, it's also true that in this room tonight, we're going to try to share some wisdom of things that ChatGPT, you know, it may be able to synthesize wisdom, but it won't necessarily have life's perspectives that some things that we can share with you. And it all begins with an idea that Rashi and Parshas Yisro shares with us, and that is that kol haschalos kashos. All beginnings in life are difficult. No matter where you are, no matter where you're going, whether it's a summer program in Israel for the summer, whether it's 11th and 12th grade, whether it's starting yeshiva, whether it's college, graduate school, a job, a marriage, a family, moving to a new home. No matter what, all beginnings in life are difficult. There is no moment that exists that is the beginning, a transition in life that's not difficult. That's baked in to the life that we lead all over the place. And I want to share you a story about that. There was a Talmud of Rav Lezer Geldzahler who left his yeshiva, his Rebbe's yeshiva, and he went to go learn somewhere else in another European city. And this city was different. It was far away from his home in New York. And so, and it was far away, and he got to his new yeshiva, and he was homesick, and he was struggling, and he wasn't motivated, and eventually he took a day off and went roaming around town instead of sitting in yeshiva. And he did this on one day, and the next day he felt horrible about the fact that instead of sitting in yeshiva, he was roaming around, sightseeing, cruising around the town, trying to take in what's a good shop to go to, where do I get some good, you know, slushy, maybe some good candy, some snacks up the hill in the Makola. You gotta go look around sometime. That's part of life also. But he felt bad because he did it during yeshiva time, and that wasn't who he wanted to be. But it was hard for him. He wasn't feeling successful in his learning. And it was a new place. He kept on doing that. Day one, day two, day three. He feels horrible about himself. And he called his Rebbe. Overseas call. Collect call. And it was expensive. It wasn't easy to reach his Rebbe. But finally he got through. And the Rosh Hashiva gets on the phone. And he said, Rosh Hashiva, I'm so broken. I'm in such a bad place. This is the worst decision I ever made in my entire life. I can't believe I left you. I was doing so well. And now in this new yeshiva, I'm doing terrible. It's awful. And Reb Lezer listened to him as he admitted that he hadn't been learning. He hadn't been attending Starim the way he should have. And he said, listen, I want you to go make a l'chaim. He's like, what? I want you to go make a l'chaim and rejoice because you're so fortunate. He's like, huh? He says, there's over 7 billion people in the world. And how many of them would experience pain and disappointment if they weren't sitting with a Gemara for a few days? How many people in the entire world population would be so broken and so upset and so worried and so emotionally connected if they used a couple of days for the wrong reasons? Who feels that? And the Talmud said, you're right. So few, so few. He said, you're a minority of a minority. He said, Ashrecha. He said, go make a l'chaim. Obviously, it was a Vayishas Talmud. Go make a l'chaim. And he said, then go start again. And in so many times in life, Bruchim Habayim. Todah Rabba. So many times in life, we go through situations, we're in a new yeshiva, we're in a new program, and it's bothering us. And the first thing that we can share tonight is the fact that it bothers us, the fact that it's kashe, the fact that it's difficult, isn't a bad thing. It's actually a very wonderful thing. And that grappling that we have to do, and that difficulty that sometimes we have to scramble together and figure it out, don't view that as a weakness. You should actually view that as a strength. Because the fact that you actually care, and the fact that it bothers you, shows the type of person that you are. It shows that you have a heart of gold, and it shows that you're invested and you have the capacity to succeed in a crazy way. So we're going to share tonight five different pieces of advice that when we're in a transition, we're in a situation that's new and difficult, what we could do. And please give your attention to Rabbi Kamenetsky, who's going to share our first one.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Shulman. And of course, as Rabbi Shulman already noted, welcome, Bobby, to learn with us. A couple of years ago, I read a book that totally changed the way I make decisions, or at least try to make decisions, when times are tough. As Rabbi Shulman said, this is the first of five of perspectives to share that I know have helped me and perhaps helped others when we struggle. The first one is, I assume most people here, by a show of hands, does anyone here know who Annie Duke is? Annie Duke. I assume not. That's probably a good sign, given that she used to be a world champion poker player. So I think it's probably for the best that we don't know who she is in this room. That being said, after a while, she retired and became a cognitive psychologist. She became a social psychologist. And she has a book called How to Decide. And in it, she discusses a concept that I assume that many folks here have done when they're struggling with something, when they're maybe grappling with a difficult decision. What should I do for the summer? What should I... making a pros and cons list. And what she wrote in this book I thought was fascinating. You know, you sit down with your pros and cons list, pro on this side, cons. Pros and cons lists are flat, as if payoff of the size doesn't matter. Given that it's merely in a list form, a pros and cons list treats the chance of an early arrival, if I were to drive quickly, as equal to the possibility of getting into a serious traffic accident. But then she continues, and this is the point that I think is so vital for us, and will lead us into our first of five perspectives. Without explicit information about your subjective weight toward each issue, it is unclear how to proceed. Your subjective weight. At the end of the day, however many people in this room, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created each of us differently. Right? As Rabbi Shulman mentioned, what can ChatGPT not do? ChatGPT might get 100% accuracy on a math question. They might even be able to explain what I'm saying far better than I can. But what they can't do for anyone in the world is know myself, is know yourself. At the end of the day, if we are living to be objectively correct, objectively successful, then at a certain point, we're chasing something that's not me. I have the obligation, the responsibility, and most importantly, the opportunity, the privilege to be the best version of Shai Kamenetsky possible. And each person in this room, that's all you can or even should strive to be. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's not as simple as it says to know yourself. Because most of the time, we go to the same schools, we go to the same camps, we have the same tests, we have the same grades. So I get an A, you get a B, I did better than you. There's some truth to that. But that's not true as it relates to decisions in life. And decisions in life, perhaps this week, were mourning, of course, the Meraglim, who set the stage for Tisha B'Av. And we know there were 10 Meraglim who shared negativity about Eretz Yisrael, and there were two who were able to overcome their surroundings. The first, of course, was Yehoshua. And Yehoshua, before they went out to Eretz Yisrael, Lasoris Aretz, to check out the land, the Pasuk tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Yehoshua a different name. His name was Hoshea, and he switched it to what? Yehoshua. And the Mefarshim explain, because he wanted HaKadosh Baruch Hu with him, Moshe Rabbeinu was supporting Yehoshua, you're going to be okay no matter what happens. And who was the other person who was successful? Anyone know? Who came back? Kalev. And what did Kalev get? Kalev didn't get a bracha. What was his key to success? What was, okay, Yehoshua had the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu in his pocket. That's a great bracha. But what did Yehoshua have? Pasuk's not so clear. It doesn't really tell us other than one vague point. Later in the Torah, the Pasuk tells us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Va'avdi Kalev, Ekev, Haisa Ruach Acheras Imo. Ruach Acheras Imo. He had a different spirit within him. What does that mean, a spirit? That's such a vague, ambiguous, confusing. He had a spirit? Says Rashi, Achas Bepeh, the Achas Belief. He was one thing the way he acted. He pretended like he was friendly with the Meraglim. He was on their side. But Achas Belief, he knew deep down who he was, what he strove for, what his opportunities were, and what he wanted to become. And that's what allowed Kalev to, what did he do? Anyone know when they were all in Eretz Yisrael? What did Kalev do? The Torah tells us that Kalev broke away from the Meraglim. And he went where? Where many of us are winding up tomorrow? What? Ma'ariv Samach Pela, where Mirtz Hashem we're all going to be tomorrow. Kalev broke away from the other 11 Meraglim and said, you know what I need? You're right, the other 11 Meraglim, they didn't need that. Yehoshua, who was being successful, didn't need that. But I, Kalev, I know what's best for me. I know that I'm different than Yehoshua. I'm different than the other 10. Ruach Acheres Simo. It's not easy, Chevra. It's not simple to separate yourself from the crowd and really reflect, what are my strengths, weaknesses? What do I enjoy? What do I enjoy less? But what Yehoshua has taught us, I mean, what Kalev has taught us, I believe, is when the going gets tough, the way to overcome is not by trying to fit in, not by trying to define yourself by other objective, successful measures, but rather subjectively. Who am I? What do I enjoy? What do I want to aspire to be? And then I can accomplish the world, because if I'm always trying to chase someone else's definition of greatness, then by definition, you're never going to reach it. But as long as I know my aspirations, my dreams, my hopes, then like Kalev, Ruach Acheres Imo, we'll be able to create our own spirits for our own self, and we'll be able to ultimately overcome it. Sharp. Okay, now we'll finish Rabbi Shulman for point number two.
Tip number two, friends. Not only do you need to know who you are in the present, but you also need to know who you want to be in the future. We all have mentors in life, people that we look to, our parents, maybe grandparents, uncles, aunts, teachers, madrichim. And secretly inside, sometimes we think to ourselves, I want to be like Mike. I want to be like Chesky. I want to be like Avrami. Whoever it is, whoever that name is in our life that we want to be like, we think about that all the time. We see people, we see figures in life that we look up to, that we value, that we want to imitate. Now, on Thursday night, I went into Yerushalayim to go see a family member, and I was walking the streets of Yerushalayim, and all of a sudden, I saw a giant school building. And I noticed that on this school building, the school is named after a Jew whose name is Zalman Oren. Who is Zalman Oren? Zalman Oren was born in the Ukraine in 1899, died in Israel in 1970, came here in 1926, and he served in the first six Knesset and held many different cabinet positions. He was most notably the Minister of Education and Culture. And although Ben-Gurion and Levi Eshkol and Golda Meir were all often remembered as Israel's founding fathers, this Zalman Oren was credited with shaping the country's educational philosophy. His belief was that education shouldn't just transmit knowledge, but also identity, culture, and other things that were important to developing this country. Now, when Zalman Oren was a member of Ben-Gurion's cabinet, so he wasn't a religious person, but his wife had one practice that she made sure to keep every single week, and that was lighting Shabbos candles. Despite the fact that they didn't come from a religious background, this was her mitzvah that she felt attached to. And every single Friday night, she would go and light the candles, and when she would stand there lighting the candles, she would daven that her children should become great Jews, and the only great Jew that she really knew was Ben-Gurion. So every single Friday night she would daven that our children should become as great as Ben-Gurion. And that happened for many, many years, until 1952, 1953, there was a famous meeting between Ben-Gurion and Chazon Ish. And Ben-Gurion, when he came back from that meeting, there were many things that came up in that meeting. But one thing that was very prominent that came back was that he was talking about what an unbelievable person he came into contact to. He called him angelic. That the Chazon Ish was so refined and so righteous that he was like an angel. And Zalman Oren heard this. And Zalman Oren shared it with his wife. That Ben-Gurion had come back from this meeting with this great rabbi. And he kept on talking about it, what an angel he was. And that next Friday night, his wife changed her prayers. Because that next Friday night, instead of davening that her children should become as great as Ben-Gurion, she heard that Ben-Gurion saw somebody else who was great, and he was talking about somebody else. She started to daven that her children should be as great as the Chazon Ish, the angel. And two generations later, her grandchild became a rabbi living in Yerushalayim and shared that story with people in Yerushalayim after he had become and been the beneficiary of those tefillos and those prayers. Because of the fact that his grandmother longed to see that type of character and that type of person in her family. So when we go through these transitions and we try to figure out what's going on and how do we do it, being able to look to our mentors, being able to look to people that we view as angelic, that we view as great, is a tremendously helpful thing to help us chart our path and figure out where we're going as we try to navigate these difficulties. Rabbi Kamenetsky, number three.
Okay, so just to review, point number one that I shared is understand yourself, know yourself, or strive to. Point number two is strive to look up to role models, the right role models, because they have an indelible effect on our lives. Point number three, well, you know what, I'll do it like this. I introduced my first point by asking if anyone knows who Annie Duke is, and no one answered. I assume this number will be different. Anyone here familiar with Kenneth Walker III? Kenneth Walker III. Oh, not 100%. That's not bad. Not 100%. Who is it? That did what this past year? More than that? Super Bowl MVP this past year. So what does he have to do with point number three that I think is so critical for decision making and for struggling through life's transitions or how to come out on the other side of life's transitions? In order to explain why I think Kenneth Walker is actually really fundamentally important to making decisions, I first want to reflect for a moment on the concept of Hilchos Brachos. On the concept of Hilchos Brachos. Seems strange, but you'll see what I mean in a moment. Let's say I'm having my personal favorite food, pasta and cheese. Pasta and cheese. I'll tell you, pasta is a bracha mizonos, and cheese is a bracha shehakol. What bracha would we make on that? Mizonos. Why? The ikar and the tafel. The ikar and the tefil. What does ikar mean? The main thing, the central item, the focus. And the tefil is what? How would you define tefil? Secondary, tertiary, less significant, tefil. Ikar is the focus, the main, the central. Tefil is the side point, the tertiary, secondary. Good. So we make a bracha on the ikar, and you don't have to make a bracha on the tefil. I make a brachas mizonos on my pasta and cheese, my mac and cheese, and I don't have to make a shakl. Okay, that's the halacha. Good. Why not? That's my question. Why not? If you would have asked me a couple years ago, before I dove into this topic a bit more, if you would have asked me, and maybe this is what most thought, if you've ever thought about this, if not, it's a good time to think about it. Yeah? You had your hand raised or no? Oh, I thought you had your hand raised. Okay, good. So what would it be? Many Mefarshim say the following. They say you don't need to make the shehakol because the bracha covers both. Right, you're really making a mizonos on the mac and cheese, and the cheese becomes part of the noodles, right? What did I have for dinner? Someone asked me, I had pasta. Yeah, there was some cheese on it, but essentially the cheese becomes mizonos, right? Of course you need a bracha on the cheese. It just is covered by the cheese. You have to thank God, of course. I'm thanking God for the cheese, just I'm covering it. I'm covering it with my original bracha. You can't ignore the secondary aspects of your life, the mashal I'm trying to get. But other Rishonim, the Rashba quotes the Baal HaMa'or. Ask me for the source later. He says that's not correct. When it comes to an ikar and a tafa, now let's think about our lives. Sometimes in life we have main focus. We have goals. We have aspirations. We have dreams. The problem is what? There's a lot of distractions in life. Some distractions are harmful. We don't need to delineate them right now. And some are even purposeful. They're important. They're things we need to deal with. But there's a lot of things pulling us in different directions at different stages of our life. And as Rabbi Shulman said, certainly when we get to transition phases of our life, the hardest part oftentimes about joining a new camp isn't the fun parts of camp. It's, I don't know, I have no room to unpack. I don't know where my bed is. It's loud in my room. The light's not turning off. My phone's not working right. All those tertiary, that's not going to make or break my summer. But if you add up a bunch of tertiary, secondary things at a certain point, it's going to overwhelm and overcome me. I lose focus of the central item, of my ikar. What's the real reason I'm here this time? Says the Rashba and the Baal HaMor, it's incorrect that you need to make a bracha on the cheese. He uses the following phrase, Kevan de tfeila ninhu, because the cheese in our example is a tufel, it's secondary, lo ba'i bracha. It does not, what does ba'i mean, require, need a bracha. You have to, in life, be so laser focused, so almost blinded to the world around you as it relates to your main hopes, dreams, aspirations. Oftentimes when we get to transition situations in life, we get so bogged down by the tertiary things, by the secondary, we lose track of why we were here to begin with. We lose track of our goals, of our dreams, of our aspirations. And by the way, this is just a 20-second aside, how do we paskin in this machlokas? In a regular day, right, let's say I bring in the cheese after I started the pasta. Do you have to make a bracha on the cheese then? I made a bracha on the... Right, of course you do. Except in which situation do you not? In a suda, if you washed. Why? So in our mashal, it's perfect. In the day-to-day aspects of life, of course, you can't ignore the world around you. You have to deal with the tertiary, secondary things. But as it relates to big things like a suda, goals, dreams, aspirations of mine, you have to be laser-focused. So what does that have to do with Kenneth Walker III? I think it has everything to do with him. Right? So he was Super Bowl MVP a few months ago. And what did his team tell him a few weeks later? Anyone know? He's out. We're not spending big money on a running back anymore. When I was growing up, and that's funny because we're not even that far apart in age, but it happens to be accurate. When I was growing up, the most famous NFL players were all running back. Anyway, right, whatever, we're not going to go through. But in my day, the most famous players in fantasy, first round picks, the highest paid players on every NFL team, behind the quarterback, running back. They were on the cover of Matt every year, running backs. And yet now, what do they do with the Super Bowl MVP? They ship him out. Why? Not because the running game isn't important. Not because the inch by inch, the small moments in our lives, the secondary, tertiary, small details in life aren't important. Of course they are. You can't win the Super Bowl without a great running back. But at the end of the day, maybe a good running back wins the possession, small plays here or there. But as it relates to the big plays, the big growth, the big aspirations, becoming the best version of myself, okay, I want to grow a tiny bit. Okay, running back's okay. But we want to be the best league-leading explosive offense. Okay, those are the big plays. That's when I have to look downfield. I can't just go for 3 yards. I need to remind myself, what's the ikar? The ikar is getting to the end zone, not 3 yards. So, again, you could say that I'm wrong as it relates to the NFL salary cap. You know, you could say that. You could ask someone else. But I think the mashal is true that as it relates to aiming big, aiming far, I want to go deep downfield. Okay, we're going to separate the running backs. That's secondary. But as the Baal HaMor told us, Kevan de Tfeilin in him, since it's a tertiary, secondary thing in our life, if we want to aim big, we have to stay focused on our eyes downfield to the receiver far down. Okay, now we'll move to point number 4.
At so many points in life, so it's easy to always have our eyes downfield. When we're in high school, we look forward to yeshiva. When we're in yeshiva, we look forward to our job. When we're in our job, we look forward to retirement. When we're retired, we look forward to more retired. Anyway, there's so many different places and spaces that we could allow our mind to travel to. And so when we're in a tough moment, sometimes we're looking past that moment. But sometimes in life, we have to live in that moment. In high school, there's structure. Don't just look past that. But each stage of life gives you one thing that you might not have afterwards. So take advantage of that. Yeshiva gives you time. Take advantage of that time. College gives you freedom. Marriage gives you partnership. Parenthood gives you purpose. Many people waste each stage wishing they were in the next one. I can't wait until this. The year's over. I can't wait until I graduate high school. I can't wait until this is over. I can't wait till that's over. And what happens over time? We're always looking downfield. We're always looking to the next stage, and we never get to experience and live in the stage that we're in. So if we always are looking past some difficulties, we never get to live life. We have to learn to live in that moment. And not only is it true about the future, but it's also true about the past. The Jewish people, when they came out of Egypt, what did they say in the Midbar? They start having these recollections about the fish for dinner, the melon for dinner, the cucumber. Hashkacha, no? We had all this for dinner. Fish, cucumber, melon in Egypt. What? And they're asking to go back? Does that make any sense that the Jewish people were enslaved all that time and all of a sudden they're in the desert and they're looking back to the Ramot Shapira dinners? At the end of the summer, when you go home, you're going to be at home telling about dinner tonight? About the fish, the melon, the cucumbers? Something tells me he's not going to be doing that. That's what I think. So what happened? How did that happen to the Jewish people? Seems ludicrous. And the answer is that sometimes when we live in a reimagined past, we don't have enough energy to get the most out of the present. Sometimes we so, in a challenging circumstance, we romanticize what our past was that we're not able to live now. You could even romanticize what it was like to be a slave in Egypt. You could even romanticize what it was like in elementary school when you're in high school. You could even romanticize what last summer was compared to this summer. You could romanticize your first job as opposed to this job. Because you can always play tricks with yourself to say the grass is greener over there. So when we approach difficult, important moments in life, we have to be able to live in that moment, both in not looking past it, and both in terms of looking back to what we've already experienced. Live in that moment, take it on, experience, get the benefits of it, and then we're able to take advantage and get past some of the difficulties that come along.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Shulman. So again, just to review, point number one, well, even before that, Rabbi Shulman's introduction was Kol HaSchalos Kashos, right? Just the fact that we embrace and understand that is so vital. And the story of Zalman Oren. Point number two, get to know yourself subjectively. Who am I? Because each of us is blessed with different strengths and weaknesses. Get to know yourself. Point number two, get to know your role models. Embrace role models. Point number three, Iker and Tafel. What are your priorities? Stay focused on your priorities. Number four, as Rabbi Shulman just said, that we shouldn't stay in the moment, not always be looking ahead. Right, might aspire ahead, but look ahead, embrace the brachos that you have in front of you. And point number five, and I started the first two by asking if anyone knows who someone is, so I'll start this one by asking if anyone knows what the sciatic nerve is. You know, let's start with, knows what the sciatic nerve is. In Hebrew, two words? What? You've heard of it, but you don't know what it is. The sciatic nerve. The Gid HaNasha. Thank you very much. The Gid HaNasha. I actually think sciatic nerve is one of those phrases that you only use it when you're translating a Hebrew word, right? I've never heard of the sciatic nerve outside the context of the halachos of Gid HaNasha. Anyone have another example of that? I have one other. Vessel. Has anyone ever used the word vessel outside the context of translating the word kli? I don't know. I can't think of another one. But anyone? Anyone have another one? Anyway, so sciatic nerve is a Gid HaNasha. Why is the Gid HaNasha important on a Jewish level, halachically? Because why? Right, we can't eat the Gid HaNasha. Why? What's the story behind the Gid HaNasha? The story behind the Gid HaNasha is the idea that Yaakov Avinu was fighting with the Malach when he went back to get the Pachim Ketanim. Yaakov was fighting with the Malach. And what happened? Yaakov won, but what happened to him? Right, he lost the battle, so to speak, but won the war. He got hit on his side, his sciatic nerve, so to speak, and he got injured. He got injured in his sciatic nerve. The pasuk says, "Hutso le'al yirecho," and he limped away. Yaakov Avinu, he limped away. Al Cain, therefore, says the pasuk, "Lo yochu bnei Yisrael segir hanasha." We don't eat the gir hanasha. So why don't you and I eat the gir hanasha? Because Yaakov Avinu got hurt in the gir hanasha. So why don't we eat it? So most mafarshim say to remember the story, the miracle that he was saved, the miracle that Yaakov Avinu was saved. Yaakov Avinu was fighting with a malach. Who's going to win, a person or a malach? The malach's going to win. No, Yaakov Avinu won, and all he came away with was this limp. That's what we remember. The problem with that pshat is as follows. Listen closely. What's the single worst way to remember something? Or let's flip it around. In Judaism, when we want to remember certain things about how the bread was made when we were leaving Egypt, what do? What do we eat? We eat matzah. What do we drink? Dalet kosos. On Hanukkah, what do we eat? Oily foods to remind us of what? The miracle of oil. On Shavuos, we have dip. And yet here, to remind me of a miracle, what do? We ignore it. People in this room couldn't remember what sciatic nerve meant 30 seconds ago. What a terrible way to remember something. Guys, this huge miracle happened with this item, so let's never talk about it the rest of our lives. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein, right, the great Gadol, the great posek of the 20th century, discusses the idea there are certain convoluted, complicated halachos about how to remove a sciatic nerve from your food. It's so complicated, he was concerned that people didn't even know the halachos, which would be a problem, because no one even thinks about it anymore. We just remove that whole... What a terrible way to remember... It should be a halacha once a year. In that week's parsha, what should we do? This week's parsha, everyone has to eat the gir hanasha. If I was in charge, that's what I would have done. Everyone has to eat the gir hanasha. Then we'd all, what would we do? Why are you eating that gir hanasha? Oh, to remind us of the miracle. But we do the opposite, avoid it. What's the pshat? So I think the pshat might be this. Often in life, when we're going through struggles, we're going through frustrations, difficulties, we get so laser focused on that struggle, on that difficulty. 99% of my life, Blei Hara, might be perfect. But because there's a certain, I don't know, my phone's not charging well, I don't have room for this, this isn't working, this relationship. Yeah, but think about all the amazing relationships you have. It's very easy to get caught up in the frustrations of life, which are real and significant. We're not here to downplay them. That's why we're gathered together tonight, to talk about how to go through those frustrations. But as point number 5, I would like to share that sometimes the best way to overcome a challenge is use the word compartmentalize it. Put it to the side for the time being and focus on the brachos in your life. We start every day with Moda Ani Lefana. Thank you, Hashem. It's the first thing we do. We are called Yehudim. We are thankful beings. That's what it means to be a Jew, to be a thankful person. The halacha is we're supposed to try to say 100 brachos a day. Why? To cultivate in ourselves this personality of gratitude, this personality of appreciation, this personality of understanding that it's true there are challenges and frustrations in life, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I know how much you give me, and I know how much I can focus on and be thankful for. There's an amazing article a couple of years ago in the New York Times called "Gratitude Really Is Good for You. Here's What the Science Shows." I just want to read one sentence. What impresses me are the objective, biologically verifiable outcomes that go beyond self-reported measures. Gratitude has explicitly been associated with lower blood pressure, higher levels of heart rate. The more gratitude I have in life, I think I've heard Rav Ephraim Goldberg use the phrase, an attitude of gratitude, living a life of appreciation. Understanding, yeah, 1%, 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% of my life might be frustrating in this moment during this transition phase. But if we focus on the brachos in our life, on the good, on the great, then we'll be able to lean into those and hopefully be able to be successful. And that's what Yaakov Avinu was teaching us. Why do we avoid eating the gir hanasha? Yaakov Avinu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us is, guys, in life, sometimes you're going to limp. Sometimes you're going to lose a battle. You're going to get hit in your sciatic nerve. And you know what we're saying? We're responding. We're responding to it and saying the following. We're saying, you know what? We don't care. Bilti nechshav etzlinu. We are going to avoid it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have so much to be thankful for. I'm just going to limp away and I'm going to go on in life. So why do we avoid it? To say when there's frustrations, what it means to be a Jew, I'm going to focus on the brachos and the appreciation and the greatness in my life. So just to close on, first of all, as Rabbi Shulman began with, Kol Hashkolos Kashos, the understanding that life at times is going to give us challenges. Hopefully Rabbi Shulman and myself gave you five aspects to focus on, five perspectives that we could all work on, even if only one or two of them spoke to you, something that you think is within reach for you. One or two of them could be so helpful, hopefully, for each of us as we struggle through life. And we'll be able to hopefully come out on the better on the other side. And I'll just note, just to close, the best thing you can do when you're struggling, better than any of the ideas that Rabbi Shulman or myself said, in my opinion, you could ask Rabbi Shulman after, but the number one thing you can do is not be afraid to take a step back. Not be afraid to say to yourself, I know I'm struggling right now. Oftentimes when we struggle, we get so caught up in it, it's hard to swim our way out. We just start flailing, like we're drowning, chas v'shalom. The number one thing we can do, and we see this time and again in Avos from the Chumash, the number one thing we can do is take a step back, reflect, think, and prepare for what we can do. And then Amir Tzah Hashem, no matter, you could turn to ChatGPT, you can call up Rabbi Shulman, but Amir Tzah Hashem then, we'll be able to overcome any challenges. Everyone have a wonderful night. The next session begins in a few minutes.